News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
If you encountered a 6'2", 225 pounds strapping baby shark over the weekend in your neighborhood, then in fact you have met Dalton Orwig.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8:06, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. So you guys did it up as a family.
Yeah, we had our first, I guess, official trick-or-treating experience as a family with the now near two-year-old. She was too small last year to make the rounds.
Right.
And this year we were unsure if there would even be rounds to be made for trick-or-treating. But thankfully, our neighborhood did end up having lots of people handing out candy, and Baby Shark was a happy, she got the candy, is what I'm trying to say. The Baby Shark got lots of candy, and
yes,
there was Mama Shark carrying Baby Shark, and then Bud Light Shark was manning the kid carrier at the sidewalk. So I stayed 50 yards away.
Such a mobile thing to do is just to drink beer as you're walking along with your with your toddler. Just pounding the beer as you go.
And I was the DJ of the Bluetooth speakers. We made our way around. So I had a pretty important role, but carried and then eventually ate a lot of candy because, you know, you get the little kids, they can do the trick-or-treating, but some of that candy is just too much sugar for a 1.5-year-old. So I ended up eating lots of candy overnight.
So you had the sugar high for the most part.
I will say I'm a little embarrassed after the trick-or-treating on our block this weekend. So we did early trick-or-treating, got the kid out there, got some snacks and treats and stuff, and then we went back home so that we could hand out candy.
Yep.
And we ended up having a lot of trick-or-treaters in my neighborhood Saturday night. But at some point in the night, and it started with one little kid, I think she was dressed up as Elsa from Frozen, and she basically just went trash and started handing us trash through our doorway.
So she didn't come to get something. She came to drop off her trash?
It was both. She wanted candy from us and a trash can.
That's not a good trade.
And she had tinfoil. So we're like, is somebody giving out hot dogs? And then after that, everyone that came to our door had at least one. Most had two hot dogs wrapped in foil. So someone in my neighborhood started giving out hot dogs to the trick-or-treaters and immediately won the Best House Award. Because
so evidently somebody in your neighborhood is a stadium vendor.
Yeah.
They give out hot dogs at Halloween.
I mean, they had to have grilled up at least 200, 300 hot dogs for the amount of people that came through.
That's funny.
So we lost the Best Treat Award, but everyone went home with hot dogs, so I guess everybody's a winner.
8 minutes after 8 o'clock at FM Talk 106.5, we just talked to John Sharp a little bit about the damage up in Washington and Clark County, and they got some polling issues up there, so that's something we'll have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, with the power outages, how will that affect some of these more rural counties come tomorrow on Election Day? Now, I've been paying attention to the mayor of Citronelle, Jason Stringer's Facebook page, and they've had lots of people helping out over these last few days. Yesterday, for instance, the Disaster Relief Center at Camp Whispering Pines was open, and I would imagine, I'm not sure, it's not confirmed, but I would imagine they would be open again today. And the mayor, Stringer, said anyone needing help can go and complete a request for a chainsaw crew or a tarp team to help with home needs, and that is located at 7740 Union Street, Camp Whispering Pines, the Disaster Relief Center, and they opened yesterday at 10 a.m., not sure of the hours for today. But they were helping out yesterday. Also, Restoration Church yesterday in Citronelle, they were serving lunch to the community and first responders there on State Street between 4th and 5th Streets. That was yesterday they were giving out lunch. And also, One Meal Mobile was set up at Highway 45 beside the Junior Mart. They were giving out meals yesterday. So those were all from yesterday. I have not seen on new reports from today. I do know Citronelle, the school was closed today.
Okay.
And same thing in Clark County and Washington County. There's only 8 schools in Mobile that are not open today, and Citronelle being one of those. So lots of damage there. And then looking at the Clark County Emergency Management Agency page, they said United Way of Southwest Alabama is operating a volunteer reception center at the Clark County Outreach Center. That's at 118 Clark Street in Grove Hill, open from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. That they were at least over the weekend. But if you have needs for tree removal, tarps, and debris cleanup, call 211 for more info. That's not specifically for Clark County only. Anyone can call 211 with issues from Hurricane Zeta. Also, if you have damage or debris on private property and you need some assistance, you can call the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief at 334 334- 334-261-8631. That's the Southern Baptist Disaster Relief, 334-261-8631.
Quick question. FEMA.
Yes.
The FEMA response, it was something we reported about immediately in Baldwin County, or soon thereafter.
Yeah.
So, is FEMA in the picture at all here yet?
They should be, and there's been no formal disaster emergency
declaration
yet, but the mayor of Citronelle, Jason Stringer, he was responding to someone else asking about FEMA. He said, to his knowledge, this has not yet been named a FEMA event, but Stringer said they expect it to be. So FEMA not yet in the mix, and still taking care of some folks from Hurricane Sally, trying to get a lot of those disaster declarations in from a lot of the people that experienced damage from that. But as of right now, Hurricane Zeta has not been declared a disaster, bringing FEMA into the mix.
I wonder if it has to do with, like, FEMA was quickly in Baldwin County, but in Baldwin County there is a larger population grouping there, you know, between, well, there's just, you know, Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, up to Alberta, Fairhope, and all. More people live there, whereas in those counties, there's just, it's a smaller population base, and maybe, I don't know.
I'm not sure how they make those decisions.
Me neither.
Exactly. And I do know that, you know, Congressman Bradley Byrne was involved from the start when Sally came through here, and a lot of his area would be covered from Hurricane Zeta as well. So having politicians that are in the mix with those folks from FEMA and some of the higher parts of government, certainly important in a situation like this.
Yeah, need some advocates.
Power outages were widespread from this storm. And we saw, you know, I think half of Mobile County was without power immediately after the storm. That number has been knocked down from, I think it was around 140,000. I might be a little off on that, but now in Mobile County, just under 7,000 currently without power. Baldwin County, pretty much 100% back online, and that follows the reports from Baldwin EMC and Riviera Utilities that they were 100% back online following the storm. But Alabama Power across the state still has nearly 56,000 customers without power. And if you look at the power outage map, you can see exactly where this storm cut through the state, because starting in northern Mobile County and then working your way through Washington County, Clark County, Monroe, Wilcox, Marengo, Dallas, Perry, even up into Chilton and Coosa counties and Clay, lots of damage and lots of power outages. And Alabama Power gave an update over the weekend. They said they expect 95% of their power to be back online by the end of day tomorrow. And they said in Saraland, restoration scheduled to be complete by Monday evening, which would be tonight. In Mount Vernon, a restoration scheduled to be complete by Tuesday evening. In Butler, by Wednesday evening. And then Citronelle, Thomasville, Grove Hill, and Jackson by Thursday evening.
I guess there's enough time in between now and Friday, but I'm thinking about some of these areas got hit, and they've got teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They've got, their high school is in the playoffs. They're either community or county high schools in the playoffs, and you've got to wonder what sort of shape they're going to be in to practice, to go to school, to get ready for their first game this coming Friday.
Yeah, I know. I believe Clark County, Jackson, and Thomasville high schools are all in the playoffs.
Wow.
Now, we've seen one cancellation slash forfeit from St. Luke's, but that's because of a positive COVID-19 test. I'm not sure how the AHSAA would work out if some of these schools can't host the game or play in the game because of the storm damage, whether they would try to rework that and schedule it for a different day or exactly what they would do. But also, you have the general election tomorrow, and you mentioned it earlier, with so many of these counties experiencing widespread power outages, how will that affect the elections? And you know, a story from WPMI, mynbc15.com, they mentioned some of these polling locations in Washington and Clark County, and they said the power crews working to get the lights back on at those polling locations. Washington County probate judge Nick Williams said only one of the county's 19 polling locations had electricity over the weekend, but he said that everyone will be allowed to vote. They quote him here in this article saying, everybody will be allowed to vote, and their vote will be counted. I will guarantee that. I can't guarantee the power, although I would love to. So the backup plan, in case these polling sites don't have power restored by voting tomorrow, Williams said they'll still be given the ballot. They'll mark their ballot. The only difference will be it will go in what's called an emergency bin. It'll then be brought to the courthouse or wherever we decide. It'll probably be the courthouse because we have a generator here, and it will be tabulated there. So if there are polling locations without electricity, they're going to get those ballots, take them back to somewhere that does have electricity,
do it manually,
and count it there. That's exactly right.
That is... It's so 2020. Yeah. Hurricane affecting the general election.
And most of the polling places in Clark County down as well right now. They had 30 polling locations there. So this could be a major issue tomorrow. Now, Dale Leash with Lanyap, he talked with some officials here in Mobile. And Mobile County Probate Judge Don Davis said they reached out to the polling locations countywide and had not heard of any structural damage that would prevent voting, even in some of the hardest hit areas like Bethel Baptist Church and Memorial Baptist Church in Citronelle. Some still without power, but Davis said election officials reached out to Alabama Power prior to Zeta making landfall and gave the power company the addresses of those polling locations. So they're kind of at the first, at the top of the list for getting power back to a lot of these polling locations.
You've got to prepare for anything and everything right now. COVID, hurricanes, all rolling into an election that might be a little dysfunctional because of those factors.
Yeah.
It is 17 after 8, FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings. All right, I'm going to come up with my, well, I'm going to reveal my theory on what's going on with Donald Trump right now. And y'all just decide whether it makes any sense or not, but it's 8:23 at FM Talk 106.5. I will be part of the election coverage tomorrow. I'm very excited about that. Very honored to be in the mix.
Yeah,
that usually just, you know, for years I just played Carrie Underwood and shut up. I didn't get political. But now it's they're turning up my voice.
Yeah, we promised.
Turning up my voice.
And that election coverage starts tomorrow night at 7.
Yep.
Which polling places should be shutting down around then in Alabama, and we should have some results from the eastern states as they wrap up polling for tomorrow's general election. And, you know, so many of those battleground states are on East Coast Standard Time.
Yeah.
So we should have some results from them then, but with all this early voting and absentee voting, the states differ in when they will begin counting all that early voting, which means it could be some time before we know who the winner is in tomorrow's election. And we'll break that down later in this hour. I have a map that says when each state will begin counting their early voting and absentee voting and how that lines up with the 12 battleground states that are discussed so often.
So the Eastern time zone states in question tomorrow include Ohio and Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida.
That's right.
Those are all Eastern time zones. So,
and New Hampshire, I believe, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like three, you know, electoral.
Yeah, it'll definitely, I mean, they've been campaigning in New Hampshire as well, too, so that's important also.
Yeah.
But who knows when we'll find out who the winner is, and of course that could lead into some bad things possibly happening tomorrow night and the days that follow with the rioters out there. And if one side's not happy with the results or the expediency of those results being announced, then that could cause some issues nationwide as well.
Look, I mean, Los Angeles gets destroyed when the Dodgers win the World Series.
Yeah.
It's not going to take much for people to misbehave.
No, it really won't. And, you know, yesterday both candidates were out stumping for votes, and the president, I don't know how he's keeping up this schedule. It seems like he's hitting five states every single day, and
has been
for a while now. But yesterday, the president was in Michigan, Florida, Iowa, North Carolina, and Georgia. Biden had two stops in Pennsylvania yesterday. He's heading to Cleveland today and then returning to Pennsylvania to wrap it up for the Biden campaign. But the president today going back to Michigan, North Carolina, Wisconsin. I guess he's going to wrap it up tonight in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the same place he held his final rally leading into the 2016 election.
It's kind of symbolic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's some of what the president had to say yesterday.
That if Biden wins, China wins. When we win, America wins. In 2016, Michigan voted to fire this corrupt political establishment, and you elected an outsider as your president who is finally putting America first.
Joe Biden, not Joe Biden. Pinch hitting for Joe Biden, number one, Barack Obama.
Mm.
Check it out.
I love Joe Biden. He will be a great president. I came to admire Joe as a man who is decent to his core. A man who learned early on to treat everybody with dignity and everybody with respect. Somebody who lived by the words his mom taught him. No one's better than you, Joe, but you're no better than anybody else. And that decency, that empathy, That belief that everybody counts, that's really who Joe is.
Really, really, really playing the nice guy, get along guy, as opposed to Trump. We know what he does, and he wears it like a badge. Like, look at me. I'm a disruptor. That's what I do.
Yeah, you can see the strategy pretty much immediately when you look at the two campaigns. Yep. And how they plan to and have been attacking this 2020 election cycle. Now, polling not looking great for the president as we head into tomorrow's election, but again, polling did not look great for the president as he competed against Hillary Clinton back in 2016. Both campaigns feel very confident for tomorrow, or at least that's the public face they're putting on. They talked with Biden campaign senior advisor Anita Dunn yesterday on ABC's This Week, and Anita Dunn saying, as we've gotten closer to the election, instead of the number of contested battleground states shrinking, which is normally what you see at this point in the campaign, the number has actually expanded, so that we're now campaigning also in Georgia, in Iowa, and in Ohio. Meanwhile, Trump campaign senior advisor Jason Miller, he is also optimistic for the president's chances tomorrow. Yesterday, Miller said a group of battleground states in the southern U.S. that the president needs to secure re-election would all remain red, and if that is the case, if Trump gets Georgia and Florida and some more of these southern states, then Miller told ABC News that Biden would have to win four other competitive states, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, combined with a lot of the states that the Biden campaign feels confident about already. But if the president gets some of these battleground states early on, then it really will boil down to those four states, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, and maybe even Pennsylvania alone, as we've seen both candidates spend an inordinate amount of time there in that state.
So here's the thing that I'm thinking, is that Trump, the rallies that he's doing, and you know, this is just my observation, but if you've got a different opinion, we'll turn up your voice too. You can call us. Trump is, he was, after the second debate, he got back on the rails, mm-hmm. and it was applauded. It was like, okay, that's what we're talking about. That's what, you know, because it's not his base that he needs to win. He's got them. It's the people that might be somewhere in the middle that were just looking for Trump to just calm down. Mm-hmm. Let's not have that kind of base. So he did that one time for the debate, but now when he's back out where it's just him talking to his group of fans and voters, he's as belligerent as any time. And I'm just wondering if that's the right strategy.
Well, and you know, I think we were talking about it this morning, and someone else was saying that is Trump really converting the voters he needs by holding these rallies?
Exactly.
But I would say that along with each of these rallies in whatever small city, either the president went to Scranton, Pennsylvania this weekend, or he's scheduled to go there today. When the president comes to a Scranton, Pennsylvania, then that's all that everyone is talking about.
True.
At least that day. So even if you're not a Trump supporter, if you're on the fence and you might not go to the rally, you might not want to stand in line and deal with you know, the amount of people you have to see a presidential rally like that, you do hear what the president had to say because it's airing constantly on the local media.
And that's a good point.
With this late push through all of these small towns and these battleground states, these rallies may be enough to put the president back in the conversation tomorrow, and his campaign certainly thinks that's the case.
That is a very fair statement. 830 FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and more conversation. Turning up your voice, 343-0106.
FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. And even 50 degrees and sunny outside the FM Talk 106.5 studios, and a great time to talk with Louis Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louis.
Good morning. How are y'all? Nice morning.
Man, the weather is perfect out there, and a perfect chance today to head out to the lot in McConnell. What you got going on as we get November started here?
We get November started. We're waiting on the rebates to come down from General Motors. But we have traded in some stuff. I mean, we have got, I think this is the Denali Central. We've got two half-ton Denalis, 19 and 20s. We traded in, and we talked about the other day. Got an 18 Denali Yukon we just traded in with low miles. Also got a 20 model three-quarter ton Denali. So, well, like I said, we've got, you want a Denali, we got it. Also. you can check those out online. Gene should have those up here shortly. He's out trying to find the cars right now, taking pictures of them. And we're going to sit here today and try to.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Louie. All right, looks like we lost Louie there just in time.
He got all the word out that he needed to get out.
I think
so. The essential facts we're aware of now.
But that's Louie Arata, and you'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and check out their inventory always, 24/7, online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
I mean, look at the good news. Look if Louie Arata dropped out in his first sentence of the commercial. We'd have been in a lot bigger trouble.
Yeah.
It is 8:38, 22 away from 9 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, then Jeff Poor, and then Sean Sullivan, Midday Mobile, beginning at noon today. And we've got a situation in Baldwin County we need to address.
With Baldwin County, yeah, there's a school on lockdown, and Somerdale on lockdown this morning. Press release from Somerdale Police. They said police were notified of a credible threat to students at Somerdale School overnight last night. Posts on social media were made threatening to harm several students. The school is in lockdown at this time out of an abundance of caution. More information will be released as new information is available. The matter is being fully investigated and the persons responsible will be held accountable for their actions. But right now, Somerdale School on lockdown, as they look at these social media posts from late last night, and that's what we have on it right now. We'll keep you updated as soon as more information comes in on that story.
Okay. 8:39, 21 away from 9 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5. You were talking about taking some numbers and looking at them a little more closely as far as the presidential election tomorrow.
Yeah, so of course, general election tomorrow. Polls open, I believe, at 7 a.m. our time, and I think run through 7 p.m. I need to do a second check on that. But already over 94 million Americans have voted in this election. When you take into account the early mail-in voting that so many states have, and then for Alabama specifically, the absentee voting, where we've seen people lined up around the block the last few Saturdays as they attempt to get their absentee voting in. And the question now is, how quickly and when will all of these votes be counted?
So what's and these are the United States of America, Dalton. You know, states do it their own way.
Right.
This is part of what we are. So it's not just a federally mandated process.
Mm-hmm.
Each state's got their own way.
Right. And you look at these states, and about half of the states, the mail-in ballots must be received by or on November 3rd in order to be counted. And Alabama counts as one of those states. And then another half of the states, mail-in ballots may be received after November 3rd to be counted. But then within those two groupings of when you can count the votes, depending on when they come in the mail, there are also states that count the votes prior to Election Day. They started counting already.
Okay.
States that will count those votes on Election Day tomorrow before the polls close, states that will count the votes after polls close on Election Day, and then at least one state, New York, that will count the votes after Election Day. And you've been seeing where the president and former Vice President Joe Biden have been campaigning in certain states over the last few weeks, those battleground states that are going to be so important to both campaigns in order to win tomorrow. And when those votes will be counted, I think this is very important as we talk about when will we know who is the winner of this
election.
Yeah,
because New York, not so much. We know that's going to go Biden, but mm-hmm. but for battleground states, it's essential to have an idea of what's going on.
Right, so you look at the 12 that NBC News has listed. Now, they have their most recent polling out. It's a Wall Street Journal NBC News poll, and nationwide, you look at the popular vote, their polling shows Biden with about a 10% lead nationwide, but then they boil that down to these 12 most competitive battleground states, and using that popular vote metric, Biden ahead of Trump by a combined 5 points, 51% to 46%. And Biden's lead has dropped in those battleground states here over the last month. But the states they're talking about here, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And if we take a look at when each of those states will have their votes counted, starting with Arizona, they are actually counting their votes prior to Election Day. So the results we get for Arizona, assuming votes have come in on time and they're actually keeping up with these. And remember, over 94 million Americans have already voted in this election, which is over 65% of the total turnout for 2016.
That's incredible.
So Arizona, they're going to start counting their votes early. The number we we get on Arizona tomorrow night should be pretty close to the results we can expect.
That's a big state.
You take a look at Florida, and Florida is listed as one of those locations where the mail-in ballots must be received by or on November 3rd, and Florida will count the votes on Election Day, but before the polls close. So tomorrow, they'll start looking at all those early absentee voting and early voting and mail-in voting. That'll start tomorrow in Florida before the polls close. Georgia is one of the states here. Let's see. Georgia is just like Florida. They're going to start counting their votes that came in early tomorrow before the polls close. But Georgia, another important battleground state. Taking a look at Iowa, which they said is pretty close right now. Iowa has... Let's see here. They are one of the states that they can count the votes after November 3rd, those mail-in ballots that come in. But Iowa has been counting the votes already, even prior to Election Day. So
okay.
Iowa should have a pretty good number on what they can expect for the general election tomorrow. Maine, another one of these battleground states. And Maine right now, it looks like, falls in the category of... Hold on here. I've got this entire list, and I'm looking through here for Maine. So Maine, they're going to count their early votes after the polls close tomorrow.
Okay.
So the number we get from Maine when their polling closes will not be the final number that we're looking at there. In Michigan, it is the same story as Florida and Georgia. They're going to start counting the early votes tomorrow.
During the day.
During the day, and mail-in ballots must be received in Michigan by or on November 3rd. Minnesota, on the other hand, take a look at Minnesota, and they can receive ballots after November 3rd, and they won't start counting those early ballots until after the polls close. So Minnesota will be another one of the states where we won't know the results by tomorrow night when polling closes in that state. Nevada, they've got their rules in Nevada are that, let's see here, Nevada will... They take the votes after November 3rd, but they've been counting them prior to Election Day, so we should have a pretty good number on Nevada. Taking a look at New Hampshire, they are in the same boat here as the states that have to have the votes before or on November 3rd, but they will be counting their votes after polls close. So New Hampshire, we won't have a number on tomorrow night either. And then taking one quick look at Pennsylvania, which I think this battle will come down to Pennsylvania.
This
at least
is
a
it.
Lot of experts are saying that. They can receive the votes after November 3rd. So they'll still be counting mail-in ballots following tomorrow's election. They won't actually start counting their early voting until polls close tomorrow. So this one state where a lot of experts say Pennsylvania could decide the election one way or the other, we might not have the results on that by midnight tomorrow night.
So in Pennsylvania, they start your vote counts even if it comes after November the 3rd?
Yeah, they're one of the half of the states here in the USA which mail-in ballots can come in after November 3rd, as long as they were marked on the stamp before November 3rd.
Wow. Whew. FM Talk 106.5. That's going to lead to a little drama.
I'd say so.
846 with Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, turning up your voice. And also, we're checking the text line. It's the same number, 343-0106. FM Talk 106.5, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig at 851. Dalton, a native of Grove Hill, Alabama.
Yep.
So we know there's been damage up there, and we also know they've got a brand new mayor.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking about the recovery efforts following Hurricane Zeta, and we know that northern and parts of western Mobile County were hit very hard by the storm, but the counties to the north of us took the brunt of this, and you could see on the power outage map the clear path that Zeta made its way across the state, and one of those counties is the county I grew up in, Clark County, where I grew up in Grove Hill, and I've known the new mayor for a long time there, Mayor of Grove Hill, Ross Wood, checking in with us this morning. Good morning, Ross, and thank you so much for coming on Mobile Mornings.
Morning, Dalton, Dan. I appreciate you guys calling and checking in on us. It's pretty devastating to look at if you try to look at it all at one time. Thursday morning after the storm, the county was 100% without power.
Mm.
I know that, and this is your first day as mayor, correct?
It is, yes. This morning was the first day, but now, you know, I was on the council for the previous 4 years.
Yes.
So, you know, I kind of knew within the workings of things that were going on since the storm, but, yeah, now I,
now I get to carry the that bullseye.
And, you know, it's not a competition, but just talking with my parents who live in Grove Hill, they said they feel that Grove Hill, of the three big cities, relatively big cities in Clark County, that Grove Hill was hit the hardest. So what are you seeing? What are you hearing from your constituents out there? A lot of the roads are impassable, I'm sure, and lots of recovery going on as we speak.
Well, you know, yeah, there are so many of the streets, the main streets, the side streets of the neighborhood were just, you know, covered with trees, broken power poles. I would assume in Grove Hill, somewhere in the neighborhood of 75 to 80 broke power poles alone. In Grove Hill, in various parts of town, trees down. But the citizens, I mean, as soon as the sun came up Thursday morning, we had citizens out with tractors and chainsaws. They were clearing the road in front of their house. They were clearing the neighbor's yard. Then they were moving down the street, and they were moving to other parts of town. And, you know, small town Alabama, these people, we're resilient. You know, we may not get the best reputation in the rest of the country, but we pull together really well in times of need.
I mean, part of that, or all of that, has got to make you really proud. As a mayor, this is your first day, and you've been on council, but first day as the mayor of the city, and to watch the people just do it themselves and work together and work with neighbors they don't even know and taking good care of each other. It's got to be inspiring.
And without a doubt, that's, you know, it was one of the things that you know, made me want to know that I wanted to be mayor of this town, because I worked for the newspaper, the Clark County Democrat, for 30 years almost. So I've covered the parents, I've covered the kids, and now I'm into some of the grandkids. And that's from rich, poor, black, white, young, and old. I know the people, and I knew that this was possible if something like this happened, but you never want to see it happen. But we're going to, you know, we're working with the county, the state, EMA, various other organizations. They're coming in at times and bringing things in to help, and it's just a slow process that you just have to pick a spot and start working at it, because you can't do it all at one time.
Mm-hmm. And Ross, you know, you said it, you've been covering Clark County as a whole for a long time now. I remember after Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Ivan, we were without power up there in Grove Hill for a time, at least at my house we were. But a storm like this, where it was still a Category 1 as the effects were felt in Clark County, can you recall, it's been a long time since Clark County and Grove Hill have felt these kinds of winds that Zeta brought along.
Yeah, this was worse than Ivan was, and you remember the aftermath. Mm-hmm. After Ivan, there were recorded wind speeds, not gusts, but wind speeds 80 plus, almost 90 here in the county when it was coming through, and it was moving fast when it got here. You know, it was still a Category 1 as it left this county, turning into a tropical storm, moving into Wilcox and Marengo counties. It was still a tropical storm when it got to Montgomery. So you can imagine what it was like here. Hardened veterans of bad weather,
yeah,
were scared during the storm.
Mm. And I know on your Facebook page you keep a lot of folks updated on what's going on in Grove Hill, and that's been a great place for information. Also, the Clark County Emergency Management Agency Facebook page.
Yes.
But what do you have to say to the citizens right now who maybe have some damage from this storm or having a tough time getting out of their driveways and off their property? What would you like to say to those in Clark County right now that are looking for some answers?
Well, number one, our city crews, our county crews, our state crews are working diligently to get to anybody that may still be, you know, blocked in. I'll go back to our citizens, not just in Grove Hill, but in the county.
Mm-hmm.
These people that live on these dirt roads, they know about their neighbor 2 miles down the dirt road, and they didn't just clear out their driveway and a place to get on the dirt road. They worked the dirt road all the way down to their neighbor and got them out. So I don't know that we have anybody still immobilized.
Great.
By any debris or anything. Now it's just that process, and it's painful when you see a person on the corner of Street A has power, and right across the street there is no power,
mm-hmm.
and that family is wondering why they don't have power yet, and there's no way that I can explain it, but you hope that they get power. So that's been the biggest thing for so many people, is just reestablishing power, because it was in the 30s last night. It's mm-hmm. going to be in the 30s tonight. We're working on getting a shelter established for anybody that may not get power to have somewhere warm to go tonight. I should have that finalized in the next couple of hours to get the word out on that, but just keep doing what we're doing.
Hey, last question. We've got 30 seconds. Have you heard from the state, from Montgomery?
I think that they have been in contact with our local county EMA. We have the state guy coming. I will actually have a face-to-face with him this afternoon about 1:30.
Good.
And have a conference call today with the state. So it's happening. It's just a process.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Ross.
Thank you. Thank you.
And best of luck. First day as mayor.
So you want to be
Ross
mayor.
Wood.
Yeah. But he sounds like he's up to it, mm-hmm. and he sounds like he's really proud of his community, and he knows it's not a one-man fight at all.
We've seen it time and time again, the community coming together to get back online.
I was watching it yesterday in Citronelle, watching people work really well together. 858, FM Talk 106.5, Jeff Porcheau, including a conversation with Jeff Sessions on the way.